Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility.
Hello, I'm Erin Baldecki, and I'm here with my partner, Sarah Corcoran, and we are Happy University. We work with schools to deliver the tools of positive psychology and help teachers and administrators and school communities live a more beautiful life. And lately, Sarah and I have been a little obsessed with friendship and connection because this has been a very hard year for that. Sarah?
Yeah, one of the reasons why is because positive psychology is the belief that other people matter. And during this past year, your connections may have grown with the people that are in your house, and you may worked hard on Zoom and trying to connect with people in more ways. But when we think about our students and we think about our staff members, they are without a doubt, they experienced disconnection. And we want to help them get reconnected because those connections are what fuel us. So whether you are virtual or whether you are masked, there was clearly this underlying distance between people. And so we know that as we re-enter schools and we get back to some sort of normalcy, that it would be imperative that we take a step back and slow down and foster those connections and those relationships in order to help people move forward in all of the tasks that they need to do. But we know that that piece of connection is super important.
I'm curious, as you think about, as you said, going back into the schools and thinking about that pause that's necessary for your students to be able to reconnect or make new connections or to build on old friendships that might have been strained because of it's hard to build a friendship over Zoom. What does that look like in your minds, and how do we start to be able to build those as we're thinking ahead now to the beginning of the next school year, or even as in some schools' cases, they're coming back at the end here. How do we prioritize that and begin with those types of experiences for our students?
I think it's really important to be very intentional about creating a sense of belonging in your community and in your classroom. And there are different ways to do that. You can think about creating rituals in your classroom. You can bring students together. You can, you know, really facilitate that connection. I think we need to be intentional as teachers about our own connections with students and really paying attention as they're returning and we're building those connections. I think especially in upper school, it's often about the content, more about the content and less about the connections. And I think that's really gonna have to be in the forefront this year, is really thinking about how can I connect with my students and what can I do in my classroom to facilitate those connections with each other and help them feel a sense of belonging, so they're more willing to take risk and less afraid of making mistakes and more open to creating new friendships.
Sarah, you mentioned when we were talking earlier that you've been thinking a lot about friendship. And for teachers, I think, you know, for anyone, you know, thinking about what is friendship? What does friendship look like? What can you say about friendship that you've learned through your contemplation and your research?
So one of the things that Erin and I have been studying that I found just fascinating is that there's three pillars to friendship, and it's consistency, positivity, and vulnerability. And when I apply that to my life, it just rings so true to what has been a deep friendship versus what has just been more of a surface friendship, and why some friendships bloom and grow and I really connect with that person and we go off and running, and other people, we just can't seem to like cross that bridge to that next place. But when we think about friendship during COVID and post-COVID, that consistency has really been challenged, right? We just don't have that face-to-face time. And so I think that's going to be something moving forward that we need to think about. And then I, of course, I love the positivity piece, that when you spend time with somebody that you think for yourself and for them, I want to leave this experience feeling better. And I want that other person to leave that experience feeling better. And that doesn't mean that, it, you know, toxic positivity. It doesn't mean, oh, you know, I'm going to compliment her and buy her lunch and, you know, be crazy. But it could be that I'm going to be vulnerable with her and I'm going to validate her feelings, but that in the end of that interaction, that that person is left feeling better. And that is a positive experience. So that's one of the things that I've just loved applying to my life and seeing it with other people.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I'm also thinking about a lot of what a lot of schools have gone through. A lot of schools are starting to move towards having social emotional learning or social emotional health programs, sometimes for the first time ever. How do you engage with these schools, and how do you think about ways to make sure that this is not just a check mark at schools, but it has depth?
That's a great question. There are many programs out there, and I'm so grateful and happy that schools are beginning to focus on this. I think it's going to take time. I think one thing that I hope that school leaders and teachers can understand is that well-being is really the foundation for all other things. So if we are coming into school and we are not in a good place mentally or emotionally, then it's going to challenge the learning atmosphere. It's going to challenge our ability to concentrate on social justice and diversity and all the things that need to be focused on in schools right now. Really, the foundation for that is well-being. And so we need to begin to not just pay attention to that, but really kind of have it immersed in our programs and our curriculum. I think we have a long way to go on that. And I'm like you said, I'm really excited that schools are beginning to pay attention. And I think it's going to take some time, because really what it happens is on an individual level. So as we teach teachers, we want them to understand that they need to have compassion and love for themselves and put themselves in a position where they can be strong leaders. Because if you're putting everything into doing something for someone else, you can't be strong as that leader yourself. And in order to really be an example for others, we have to kind of do the work ourselves. So it is hard work, but I think it starts on an individual level and then hopefully goes into a community and global level.
And just to piggyback on that, Aaron and I, when we build our programs, we have that in mind. So all of our programs are focused on the teacher and their wellness. So whatever tool we provide them, we want them to experience it first so that they, A, make the change in their lifestyle that hopefully they'll stay with them for the rest of their lives. But then when they live that, they are way better at teaching it and giving their own personal example. As my daughter always says, Mom, don't tell me what to do, just be the role model. And so I think when teachers take that on and they become that person, that it's easy, especially in positive psychology, when you are a positive person, then when you teach these skills to your students, they can become more positive themselves.
Yeah, and just a couple of examples to get specific. So gratitude is one. Gratitude increases your positive emotion, and learning about gratitude and using it on a regular basis, practicing gratitude intentionally, ends up putting you in a place where you are happier and more open and more able to even learn and connect and see opportunities. So once you begin to really focus on that, then you can create this culture of gratitude. But it's not just doing it once in your classroom or once here and there. It's like brushing your teeth, as Sarah always says. You can't do it once a week and have it work. It has to be something that you really move into your life. And then also, you know, doing kind things for other people, really thinking about that and creating a culture of kindness and a culture where you're thinking of others and a culture where other people matter.
Yeah, I love that aspect of it, kind of like you said, with the brushing your teeth, everything. It comes back to what Sarah, you mentioned earlier, in terms of forming the friendships starts with consistency, right? And so social emotional learning, you could follow those same three themes that you mentioned. Consistency: are you going to be doing this every day? Is it incorporated everywhere you go? The positivity: do you view this as just another thing I'm supposed to do, or are you actually bringing your positive self to this experience? And the vulnerability, which I'd love to kind of go back to that aspect of vulnerability, because I think we're often taught that vulnerability has a negative connotation, that we're not supposed to be vulnerable. But I think in this world that we're living in, we're all experiencing so much that allowing ourselves to be vulnerable with each other, I think, humanizes one to the other and allows us to have deeper experiences. And so I'm wondering if you can kind of express some of what you've noticed when you've seen teachers and parents and students be vulnerable in this moment.
I think that it's imperative that we are vulnerable at this point in time, because I think we've all been made so vulnerable by the situation that's happened in our world and the grief that people are experiencing, whether that be grief from losing someone or grief from losing everything you thought your senior year would be, or everything you know, imagined for your child. And so I think the vulnerability is key to healing. And I think there's plenty of research done primarily by Brené Brown that tells us that really, in order to move forward, we need vulnerability. We have to show up as our authentic selves. And that's hard, because that, I think a lot of people have a really hard time with that. It's not easy. But that's one thing that I love about the tools that we teach, is we can kind of teach things in a more practical way to help with self-awareness, so that as people begin to understand themselves more, it maybe becomes less scary to be vulnerable in those situations.
I would piggyback on that to say that as teachers, as we become more vulnerable and we create space for that vulnerability in our classroom, that I encourage everyone, whether you're in the classroom or out of the classroom, that you approach each individual with a level of grace and acceptance for where that person is coming out of the pandemic. I know I have one daughter who's more introverted, and so going back into the world, she's quickly overloaded. Like, hey, slow down. This is too many people. She's just less comfortable. And then I have another daughter who's super extroverted, and she just can't get enough of people. But I think that we need to have grace for people and have what we call a soft entry to our interactions. And we're kind of taking the temperature of how the other people are showing up and where they are in their space and meeting them in that place. So it's a lot of grace, a lot of space for people to show up as they really are.
I love that you say grace. I have to say that in the last 12 to 14 months, I have heard the word grace used more than any other word. Maybe just my ears are piqued by it. But I'm just wondering about teaching grace and teaching vulnerability. Do you have some examples of how this has happened and how it has unfolded in different schools where you've worked?
It's a good question.
That is a good question.
For for yourself and for teaching it to students, we define grace as like a loving space for people. And when you give someone grace, you are saying to them, here's a space for you to do what you want to do as you want to do it. And I trust you to do with that space what you need. And so there's a big piece of trust involved in there, and saying, I know that you're going to do what's best for you in that situation. And I also think that for grace, there is a lot of that self-compassion. And Aaron and I teach a lot of things where we're writing statements of self-compassion, or yes. Maybe Aaron will talk a little bit about the Kintsugi practice, which I think is pretty fun. It has to do with self-compassion. So just giving people the space, and saying to that person, you're enough just as you are. You know, I love you as you are, or I accept you as you are, and here's the space to do with it what you want.
Nice.
Or need.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it begins with teaching teachers that they should first have compassion for themselves. And when you have compassion for yourself and you really live that way, you model that and your kids see that. They see you not beating yourself up, not making comments that are degrading towards yourself. And then it's also easier for you to teach students. And what Sarah mentioned, Kintsugi, it's a Japanese art of precious scars. So it's actually like you take a broken piece of pottery and you put it back together with these golden threads and turn it into something beautiful. And so we like to talk about that when we're teaching self-compassion, is to think of yourself that way. And that, you know, our mistakes, everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has these hard things that they have to deal with. We can't be well all the time. And when these things happen and when these scars appear, to put them back together with compassion and with love and with something beautiful for yourself.
And then is there something new that comes out of that then? So your example, there's something new, correct?
Yes. Oh, yes. I think when you're able to learn to have that compassion for yourself, you stop judging yourself, you stop judging others, and you learn to live a life of compassion, and you grow from everything that happens rather than judging yourself and getting stuck in some place, you are able to move forward and grow because you've given yourself that compassion. And I think a lot of people don't understand that, and they think they need to be hard on themselves to move forward. And actually the opposite is true. We really need to be kind to ourselves, and then we can calm down enough to learn the lesson that is presented.
Nice.
I'm thinking about school leaders, heads of school, principals, department chairs, the folks who really set the tone in a school. How are you seeing those leaders grapple with some of this transition? And how are you, or how are they, incorporating this idea of grace and cultivating friendship and relationships to have a positive impact on the wellness of the community?
Well, I think it definitely comes from the top down. I also think that school leaders, being married to one myself, have been really overwhelmed this year with the amount of decisions and changes and, you know, things that need attention. And I know that at the forefront of many school leaders' minds is well-being. However, there are other things that may take precedence as we go back. I think well-being was already on people's minds, but there's a lot that may come before that. And I'm hoping that as we, you know, as leaders get actually a chance maybe this summer to step back, because it has literally not stopped since March of last year, there's been no break, or at least from what I've observed. I'm hopeful that when that takes place, there'll be more thought about that and how to incorporate. And I know many school leaders are already doing that, but I know it's been really hard.
I agree with you, Erin, and I wish that wasn't the case. I know they're like, you know, triage in the hospital. They're just constantly like putting bandages on things and, you know, and fixing things up. But the elephant in the room is the wellness piece. And Erin and I have personal friends and people in schools who are literally falling apart right now emotionally that are going to be needing, you know, and that's the extreme case. And what about everybody else that's in the middle? But they're going to be needing right. to take care of this emotional piece that has been pushed to the side because schools need hand sanitizer and they need technology mm-hmm. and they need Zoom and they need all these things. Mm-hmm. But as we start to return to school, it's going to be very evident that this needs to become our number one priority. And what we have seen in our mm-hmm. work and in our calls are when we get teachers together, they are so grateful. Like they get on the calls and they all look like Oscar the Grouch. They cannot keep it together. And then we will do some tools and some breakouts, and within very quickly, they are so much lighter. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to say it's all us, right? Hey, happy university. You guys are awesome. And I do think that we play a big part, mm-hmm. but what they're really deeply missing is that connection to each other. So whether it's teachers that they don't know or teachers that they do know, they love when they have the opportunity to connect. And that brings it back to the three pillars that we talked about, a friendship, where you need that time. And you also need that piece when they're on the call with us, obviously it's going to be positive. So it's mm-hmm. both the positivity and a little bit of the time. And we've seen it in 1 hour calls make a huge improvement for people's well-being.
That's true. And one thing I want to say too, is that I don't want to, you know, be a downer or paint this, you know, terrible picture for how things are. I think we've seen so many beautiful, amazing things during this mm-hmm. time of people, you know, reaching out and going above and beyond and making those connections happen. I've seen leadership in schools that's been phenomenal. And I just want to point that out, that there've been so many, you know, hidden gems and beautiful things that have come out of this mm-hmm. And that we'll continue to, but we are in a place where we need to focus on that. And like Sarah said, people are craving connection.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any trend in terms of the folks you're talking with where maybe, school leaders and teachers are starting to maybe reevaluate how curriculum is often, you know, put ahead of social emotional wellness? You know, I think a lot of teachers are already doing more project-based learning due to the pandemic, which I think is a very positive thing. And, you know, are you seeing school leaders or teachers who are kind of pausing and reevaluating how they might kind of put some of this stuff that we've learned over the last year ahead of the you know, just the grinding of the worksheets and the lectures and the professional development and the AP and all that?
I think the teachers that have been on Zoom, I've noticed that they've really tried to do that belonging piece. Like they realize it's this piece that's missing. And if you became a teacher, it's because you love connecting with people and you love helping people and you love that interaction, right? That's one of the reasons why you became a teacher. And then the pandemic kind of took all those great reasons away. So naturally the teachers were finding ways, and whether it was like having office hours or opening up their Zoom calls early so that they could just have a quick chit chat with the students casually, or doing little things to get the students connected, or having, you know, that piece of belonging and community in the classroom. They are trying. So they're at the they're at the far end of the spectrum of like having the biggest barriers to doing that. And then teachers that are in the classroom, I think they're more capable of making some of those connections. But I also feel like everyone is feeling pressure to get content out because there was that break and students are not where they would have been at this time had we not had this experience.
How do we reprioritize that though? How do we say, yes, the content and the standards are there. However, we will never be where we were before this. And so what is important now and how do we move forward from where we are rather than constantly putting forth this myth of, oh, we're so far behind. You know, can we redefine that without having to be put it in a positive spin rather than the negative of being behind?
I think you just answered your own question. So I think that is the answer, is that we do have to give it a positive spin. And we also have to just face the reality that you can't just go back and make up for this year without facing the things that were lost and the things that were gained. And I think that we did gain this awareness that maybe the way we're going about shoving so much content and all the high pressure AP classes, all the everything, not that those things are not good, but there needs to be something else to support you as you're striving for that high level of success. And I think that's become aware. I mean, I think people have become aware of that. And that's what I hope will come out of this, is that school leaders will and teachers will begin to ask those questions. You know, there were things slowed down a little bit, and there weren't so many obligations everywhere. And some of that was really good because people had time. Kids kind of a little bit had time to be kids. I mean, especially last spring when my kids were all out riding bikes again and walking around the neighborhood and doing things they hadn't done in years. Yep. And so when you think about that, I hope that we come out with a better balance. And mm-hmm. and I hope that those questions are posed, just like you said.
Josh, I love how you said that. And it reminded me of the fact that we don't want to put this year behind us, but we want to put this year underneath us and build right. from it yes, and go yes. forward. Yes. And what Aaron and I are running a workshop this summer, and I'm really excited about it because the goal of it is to take stock on where we are and what's important. And just take a minute to say to yourself, what do I want to do with all this information that I have in this past experience, instead of just driving forward or even just finishing the year and then shutting down and saying, I need to breathe, I need to breathe, I need a break, and then starting back up in September. I do think everyone needs to take time and be intentional about how you want to move forward. What do we want to change? What do we want to keep? And what's important? Just reprioritizing is going to be crucial before, if we just pick up our bags from where we left, you're going to go to the same place. And I don't think that's necessarily where we want to go.
Yes.
Yeah. So as we come to our time here, and thank you so much for the wisdom that you've shared and the examples, I kind of had an if question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
So if you were, and maybe this will happen, if you were brought into a school at their opening meeting in September or August of 2021, what might you say to really set the tone for the school, that school year for teachers kind of coming back from this last year? And, you know, I partially asked the question to you because I've experienced listening to you talk and listening to lectures about positive psychology, how quickly a few words out of the lexicon and language of positive psychology, a mindset can be flipped. What would you say? What would be the, maybe that opening couple of sentences that you really would want to impress upon a group of teachers to set the tone?
That's a great question. Maybe we both are going to answer this one.
Please.
I would start off by acknowledging and empowering the teachers for all of the hard work that they have done and how resilient they have been and how they have showed up given all of the challenges and the changes and the lack of certainty that they just experienced, and impress upon them that as they move forward, starting off this school year, that they should be proud of themselves, focus on their relationships with the other staff members as role models, and slow down, connect with their students, and give students time to connect with each other, because I believe that those connections broaden us, they make us more creative, they make us more open for learning, they make us feel better about ourselves, they give us a boost of positive emotion. And when we have those strong connections, we are primed to learn. And if they feel that as teachers, they will be primed to teach. And if they can create that culture, they will be priming their students for learning.
That's amazing, Sarah. And that's what I would have said. I'm going to add one thing, and that is compassion. I think I would talk to teachers about how important compassion really is. And if there's one superpower I could give them, it would be that: compassion for themselves, love for themselves, and compassion and love for their students, and impress upon them the importance of helping their students have that same compassion for themselves.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And a wonderful sort of message for even heads of school who might be listening, teachers, leaders who might be listening, to start to think about, yeah, what are those things that we want to start the school year off with? Because we are standing on a very unique body of experience and hard work. Yeah. Well, Erin and Sarah from Happy University, thank you so much for being with us today. Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience in terms of upcoming programs? We'll certainly make sure your website's in the show notes, and any other links you'd like for us to put there.
Great. We want to share something that we are really excited about.
Okay.
It is called Joy Drop, and it is a program that is intentional acts of kindness to build communities of kindness within schools. And it is on our website. It is huniversity.com/joydrop.
We'll put the link in the description.
You'll put the link in and you'll be able to order cards that will be sent to you for free. And these cards they're pretty magical. So when you get a card, you will make a decision on who you're going to drop this joy on intentionally. And then you'll drop the joy and leave the card. And then that card will serve as a reminder for that person to pay it forward and to go do it for somebody else. And within a school community, if we all felt a little bit more connected and a little bit more kindness and also a little bit more gratitude, then we will all feel so much better.
Love it. It's like the flat Stanley of kindness.
It's wonderful.
That's right. And I would add to that, that as we've been talking so much about connection and friendship and relationships and belonging in the classroom, that is also a new program that we have coming out, which is a 2-week app-based program for teachers to really get them thinking about and generating ideas and taking action on creating that sense of connection and belonging in their schools starting in the fall.
Wonderful. Well, we'll include the links to what you shared and you have to offer for folks, because I think some of our listeners will certainly want to check that out. Thank you again, both Sarah and Erin from Happy University.
Thank you, Michael and Pam and Josh.
Thank you.
Had a great time.
Wonderful.
Josh and I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode of Amplifying Optimism in Education. Please join us next week for another new episode and conversation with an innovative educator from around the world.